Amazon will let you try before you buy clothes. 1 + 5 equals an iPhone running Android. And Sean Hollister from CNET is here to talk about Apple's future in augmented reality. All that and oh so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1793, recorded Tuesday, June 20th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you what you need to know about the tech news today.
Mm-hmm. So why we named it that?
Mm-hmm. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Actually, I didn't name it that. You didn't name it that.
No.
That's why it was named that.
Mm-hmm. By Tom Merritt?
By Tom Merritt.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
We miss you, Tom.
We do.
You need a little heart wipe on that. Mm-hmm. What do you have there?
Oh, I was going to bring it out for our news segment, so we should get started with the news, and I'll bring it out appropriately.
Oh, I see. It's a prop. I didn't realize that. I thought it was a pre-news prop, but it's tied into other things.
No, it's the first story.
That's right. The thing that I'm going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is really concerned with the way that you dress. So it's launching a new service for Prime members called Prime Wardrobe. Users pick three or more items, so it starts at three, items of clothing that they want to potentially buy, and they'll be added to a box that will be delivered to the user's home with 7 days to try them on and free returns for anything that they don't want to keep. The kept items, of course, are then charged to the Amazon account, and they've also tied in discounts to the amount of the items that are actually kept from the shipment. Prime Wardrobe is in beta at the moment. I went there to try and sign up and was like, well, it's in beta, we'll let you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would love to try this out. But like I said, three item minimum. The discounts, if you keep three or four of the items in your box, you get a 10% discount off of everything. If you keep five or more, you get 20% off.
Yeah, I think Amazon just gets me. I love these services. Like Trunk Club, who used to be our sponsor,
yep,
and is no longer our sponsor. I loved using them. There's another service that I use now called MM Le Fleur. Which Trunk Club is owned by Nordstrom. So I know they're bummed now because Amazon's
right,
been eating their lunch for the last few years. And
because Amazon sells lunch, of course.
Right, yeah. They've been selling you their lunch and eating their lunch and yes, all the things. And MM Le Fleur is like their own clothes and their I don't like going into a store and going shopping. I like having things delivered to me, and Amazon knows once they're actually in a box in your home, you're less likely to return them. You're going to just keep them, and throwing in that discount, that's nice too. Trunk Club used to not charge. You know, they used to mm-hmm, send you a whole box, and if you didn't like anything, you sent it all back. Now they charge you like $25.
Right.
And so you're more likely, if you keep stuff that comes out of, you know, the money, it's not like it's only a fee if you send it all back.
Right. But, if you don't keep anything.
So I wonder if Amazon's going to charge for this.
No, I mean, their plan, at least right now, they say, and it's part of the announcement, this is a included service for Prime members. You know, one of the big differences, of course, with something like this and, you know, Trunk Club, there's Stitch Fix, DN Company, Bombfell. There's a lot of companies that do this sort of thing. A lot of those companies, including Trunk Club, have stylists that are kind of part of it. And so that stylist works with you, and it's a little bit less of you having to go through the work of diving into, you know, the site and finding the things that you want to try.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of people don't need the style. A lot of people have a sense of style,
mm-hmm,
or think they do anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Or then there's the Amazon show that's coming out,
right,
you know, with the camera in your bedroom where you could just look at you and decide what looks good on you and what doesn't. What I really want to know about this is, like, how many psychologists does Amazon, like, have on their payroll to just, like, here's how you get people to buy things. Here are the triggers that will make them want to, you know, buy more things they don't need. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have people. So yeah, I'm interested in that. So here's my prop now, the Amazon wand. Which the wand. Anthony ordered this, but isn't it? Don't you just want to look into it? Don't look into it.
There's it'll Wi-Fi connection.
Fine.
Added to your cart when the connection is restored.
Oh, you're going to be added to my cart when the connection.
You.
Is,
I just that's right.
Your
you.
Barcode. So this is the $20 Amazon wand that we talked about. They're now out of stock. So, you know, if you didn't order, you have to wait because it's basically free because you get $20 in Amazon Fresh groceries. It's, I connected this to my house Wi-Fi and now I don't. I'm sure there's a reset button somewhere but because I can't connect it to this Wi-Fi. But I added all kinds of stuff to my shopping cart by voice or by scanning all the things in my refrigerator. Then I walked into the Whole Foods. I tried to scan everything there and just walk right out, and I got arrested, but I was I got out of jail.
Wait, you can't do that. Or can't, well, yeah, there's nothing stopping you from going into Whole Foods.
I'm just kidding. You can't. There's nothing stopping you except for you have to connect to Whole Foods Wi-Fi.
Right, right, right.
And as I said, I haven't found the reset button yet. It also gets charged with batteries, AA batteries, which is kind of old-fashioned.
Don't break
that's
it.
What it I know. I shouldn't break it. But that's what it looks like inside.
Oh, batteries. So it's not rechargeable.
Well, I guess you could buy those little rechargeable batteries. Right. But yeah, so Amazon.
Amazon just gets Megan.
It does just get me. It's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you are still using Uber, you can now tip your driver without carrying cash. Gizmodo reports that starting today, it will roll out a tipping option in the app. Uber will roll out a tipping option in the app. The longstanding policy of not allowing tipping has been confusing for riders, many of whom assumed that a tip was included. It was not. Uber has been sued in California and Massachusetts for not allowing this option, and they had clarified their policy that it was acceptable to give your driver a cash tip. Uber has defended their reasoning in the past by saying that they had prided themselves on having a cashless experience. The update to the app is part of Uber's 180 days of change campaign.
Oh, what a celebration. Woo! 180 days. No reason why we have this like constant stream of really good news that we're going to roll out over the course of the next however many months, because there's been a ton of really bad news prior to
Yeah. But I mean, if they are changing, I don't want to
Discourage that.
I don't want to discourage change.
For sure. For sure. Hey, that's actually a brilliant way to do it. So basically every month they're going to be announcing a slew of news. This was obviously kind of the big news, is this whole tips thing with Uber, because it's been wanted for quite a while, but from a lot of users, from a lot of riders. So good that they have it. Tips to all U.S. drivers by the end of July 2017. They're going to stage it a little bit, you know, a little bit more limited basis with Seattle, Minneapolis, and Houston as of today. But by the end of next month, they plan to have it all rolled out and everybody using it.
Mm-hmm.
Burke is asking a very pertinent and powerful question. When was day one on his card? To which I have to imagine sometime around right now. I don't know. This is the first announcement, so I imagine this is part of day one. But they had some other improvements that they also announced that I didn't really see a whole lot of articles about.
No, I didn't. I didn't either.
They had a bunch of other improvements for drivers specifically. They have a shorter 2-minute cancellation window from 5.
Oh,
so that, you know, that's beneficial to drivers, of course. No more unpaid wait times while waiting for a rider. So while they're waiting for a rider, they're actually going to get paid for their time. I'm just kind of surprised that they weren't before, but there you go. Driver injury protection insurance option, which is an option that would be something that they, you know, a portion of their earnings would go to pay for. But, yeah, they've got other bonuses coming. And this is just one of who knows how many great pieces of news we'll hear over the next however many months.
Yeah, it appears that this was day one, Burke, and all you who are interested. Day one of 180 days.
Begins so it's like, now.
I think someone should make like an Uber 180 days of change advent calendar. I think that would be awesome. Like you could put a little like tip in the first one and then. I don't know. Someone make it. I don't really have time, but
yeah,
I want to see
maybe,
it.
Maybe Travis will have some time. He's got some spare time right now. He can make the advent calendar. OnePlus announced its latest flagship Android device, the OnePlus 5, with Qualcomm's top-of-the-line Snapdragon 835 processor. 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage, running Android 7.1.1. That's Nougat out of the box. OnePlus went with a dual rear-facing camera setup that, let's be real, looks almost identical to the design of the iPhone 7 Plus, and I don't think that's overstating it. Those cameras allow for on-the-fly bokeh-style photos, kind of like the portrait mode, as well as offering 2x optical zoom, which I think is pretty nice to have. As OnePlus always does, they're releasing a relatively top-tier device here for a competitive price. It starts at $479, so sub-$500. It's not as discounted per the hardware that they've done in the past. They really kind of cut their teeth. You know, they've been the brand that has been kind of dedicated to bringing high value, low cost devices. You know, you get a lot of bang for your buck. They still are there with this device, but it's, you know, with every iteration, the price is creeping up. So it's, but still under 500, so that's pretty good.
So there was a OnePlus 3 and a OnePlus 5, but no OnePlus 4, which would you think someone with like math in their title would be able to count. But apparently 4 is a very unlucky number in China, so they skipped it altogether.
They had a reason for the faulty math.
Mm-hmm. I like the look of this phone, probably because it looks exactly like this phone. But yeah, I mean, I think it won't work with CDMA carriers like Verizon or Sprint, which I am on, and I will keep saying, even though people say that it makes me look like a tech incompetent by being on Sprint, I will keep saying it. I'm on Sprint and I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But it's getting pretty good reviews. I mean, a lot of people like it.
Well, yeah. I mean, in general, OnePlus devices do pretty well. Now, mind you, it's targeting a very niche audience. Like, that OnePlus is not a household, you know, a brand name that everybody recognizes. They only sell primarily through their online store and a few other places. It's not like you can walk into a carrier, at least here in the U.S., you can't walk into a carrier and find a OnePlus. When they initially started, it had CyanogenMod as the kind of OS running underneath. So from the beginning, it was very tailored towards people who are actually, you know, who actually kind of follow this stuff and know it. Having said that, I've used a lot of OnePlus devices. I've been pretty happy with them time and time again. They just have a really great kind of aesthetic, great design, and low cost. It's hard to turn your nose up at it, except for the fact that XDA developers discovered for the second time, this had happened once in January, they discovered this on one of their other devices, that OnePlus has something built into at least the review units. I don't know if it's going to be in the shipping units to customers, that is cheating on benchmarks. So when benchmark apps are used to kind of test the hardware underneath, from what I understand, the OnePlus has a mechanism in there that recognizes the benchmark that's being tested and ups the CPU in some way to make it score better on those benchmarks. And so this is now the second time that they've been kind of caught doing this. And so apparently they have no shame about that. And maybe that's the kind of news that doesn't hit, you know, a certain group of people. But again, this is targeting a niche group of consumers that would know this stuff.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's no denying that the hardware is still good. It's just they really didn't need to do that. They, you know, because it like boosts their numbers like what 5% in these tests, and it's just unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Let the hardware speak for itself.
Well, Instagram and Snapchat, fellow travelers in the fight for your eyeballs, both reached different milestones today. And Axios says it points to their very different strategies. Instagram stories reached 250, they reached 250 daily active users every day, today included, after launching only 10 months ago, where, not 250, 250 million.
Million.
250 million daily active users. we hopefully reach 250 active users. They reached 250 million. And hopefully we were reaching more than 250 also. They launched only 10 months ago, whereas Snapchat has only 166 million daily active users as of their earnings report last May. And they were first passed by Instagram back in April. Meanwhile, Snapchat, originally designed for your sexy selfies, has been awarded the Distinguished Edward R. Murrow Award for Outstanding Achievements in Electronic Journalism.
Yeah.
So those are awards normally, you know, reserved for places like New Hampshire Public Radio or other snooty places. But yeah, Snapchat.
I mean, I looked at the list. There are a lot of awards given out. Apparently, they award a lot of things in the Edward R. Murrow Award.
So, oh, are you saying it's like everybody gets a trophy from Edward R. Murrow?
Well, I don't know if everybody gets a trophy, but I went to the list and I did a control F to find where Snapchat sat. And by the way, if you're wondering, it's an excellence in innovation category. Snapchat's Good Luck America video, which you can actually find on Vimeo. Yes, it's a vertical video. And it basically covered the election. It's like a 5-minute piece. But if you go to that list, I mean, it's like, you know, all the way down at the bottom, the page is super long. I was like, wow, there's a lot of awards given out here.
Did we get one? Did you look for us?
I didn't do a control F for tech news today. Twit.
It could have been the fact that I continue to say 250 when I mean 250 million, which is different.
Very different. Which is not to take anything away. I mean, obviously, you know, this is an esteemed award, and hey, good for Snapchat. They have a strategy right now. They're really kind of doubling down on content. Yesterday's Time Warner news is a prime kind of example of that. And, you know, maybe this is how Snapchat differentiates itself and stands out.
Well, they are certainly hoping that. I mean, yeah. They're really pointing out that, hey, we have quality users. It's not just, you know, Instagrams. Everybody's on Instagram. What they're saying is they're more engaged. And so it's, you know, they pointed out that there are, you know, it's people are closer. They communicate with their close friends on Snapchat as opposed to Instagram, who's just communicating with everybody. And Instagram doesn't care. I mean, they have Facebook's advertising network. And so the more people, the better. That's what they're after. So even though a lot of their features, stories specifically, are very similar, I think it's interesting that they're both aiming for a different kind of view of success.
Yeah, absolutely. Google is launching a new search feature built for job seekers that taps into a number of job boards as well as job listings posted on company homepages. When you search for something in Google Search, something like jobs near me, for example, it's going to pull up a new interface somewhere in the results. Strangely, I got it on Firefox, but I didn't get it on Chrome, with controls for refining the results based on industry, recency, location, specific employer. You can kind of narrow it down to exactly what you're looking for. You could search for like writing jobs and it would have these listings categorized. That's all done by machine learning algorithms on the back end. Google removes duplicates for, you know, because a lot of these jobs get posted the same job in a million different places, and it kind of removes the duplicates, goes with the job listing that's part of the results that's the most complete. And then the machine learning algorithms on the back end sort through those, categorize them, and make it searchable for you and easy to find.
And they were very specific about pointing out this isn't a new product. It's just a new search feature. So they're not going to be actually managing the resumes or anything like that. It's just going to be easier to find a job. And I did some searches, and it was very googly and efficient. And
What did you find, Megan? What did you find when you did some searches?
There's some jobs. I'm just saying there's some jobs out there.
There's some really good jobs out there. I had no idea.
Well, I mean, it is a good use of tech to connect people to jobs. Because 46% of the U.S. employers face talent shortages. And we're always hearing about how hard it is for people to get jobs. And, you know how it is. I mean, everyone's been out of a job at some point in their life. It doesn't feel good. And you want to get a new job as soon as possible. So this is great. Great use of tech.
Yeah. And I mean, the internet is a very vast place. So any way to organize it, which is core to, you know, which is primary to Google's kind of core dedication of why it exists, why it said it exists a long time ago, organizing the world's information. This is primary.
A quick reminder, you can always comment on anything we discuss. We love getting your email, tnt@twit.tv. We read all of your email. We don't have a chance anymore to respond to all of it, but we try. We try to respond or read it on the show whenever possible. And we love when people disagree with us, and a lot of you do, and we love to hear from you as well. Of course, subscribe to Tech News Today by going to our show page at twit.tv/TNT. Apple is late to the augmented reality party. Are they fashionably late or too little too late? Sean Hollister from CNET is here to discuss. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage, the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage experience was not keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client focus. That's us. Technological revolution. Technology, we understand it. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Confidence is everything. When you go into buying a house, it is probably the most expensive thing you're going to buy in your life. And looking at all those numbers and mortgage brokers, you know, spouting all this stuff that you're supposed to understand, it can be terrifying. But Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It is simple. You can now fully understand all the little details, and then you get that confidence that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's also convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button, and it's powerful. So whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. No matter who you are, no matter what kind of purchases, what kind of credit you have, it's going to tell you what kind of mortgage that you can get, the right one just for you. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that you can pay, the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Tech News Today. Many of us were pretty excited to hear about Apple's smart speaker, the HomePod, but the more game-changing announcement was probably ARKit, a new developer tool that will help the Cupertino company take a giant leap into augmented reality. Joining us to discuss Apple's AR future is Sean Hollister from CNET. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Hi, how's it going?
And happy first Father's Day to you.
Thank you very much. She might be a little bit noisy during the segment, so apologies if you hear her over me.
Is that your real baby, or is she an augmented reality baby?
She is both. She is always constantly in my mind, no matter where I am. So you can kind of call it mixed reality, in that wherever I go, I see her appear out of thin air in front of my eyes. But also, she is right here with me right now.
Awesome. So what do you make of Apple's WWDC announcement?
I was not super impressed by any of the augmented reality or virtual reality things I saw Apple show off on stage. And then it struck me, the fact that they're doing this at all at the scale that they're talking about is super important. Even if none of the individual announcements, even if this demonstration from Peter Jackson's company, Peter Jackson from Lord of the Rings, he has a company called Wingnut AR, showed off this incredible demo, graphically impressive demo, where you've got this kind of diorama of a scene where you can see like fighting little jet fighters like flying around and battling. Even though that wasn't super impressive to me, the fact that they are going to have this AR kit for app developers to start building augmented reality applications right now with an off-the-shelf iPhone is way ahead of where everybody else is in the market right now. Facebook says, hey, you could build some AR stuff around the camera if you partner with us. Snapchat says, hey, you want to build some AR filters? We can do that. Google says, we would love for you to buy our crazy phones that are gigantic and have all this special camera hardware that we're going to require manufacturers to put in there. Apple says you can do it with an off-the-shelf iPhone, single camera. You don't need a dual-lens camera. You don't need any of this fancy stuff. They're making it work with an iPhone or an iPad with the single camera that's built in there. And we're going to start seeing all these applications there on the App Store. And that, to me, is just way ahead of what anybody else is doing right now.
So you think that makes more sense than the goggles or glasses that other companies are talking about? HoloLens, for example?
The goggles, the glasses are the eventual play. Eventually, you know, we want to all just have it built into our regular set of glasses, our regular sunglasses, carry it around with us everywhere and not have a big, bulky thing. But the companies aren't there yet. We saw what happened with Google Glass when they tried that. Everybody had to make fun of that because it was just ridiculous to imagine people wearing this device. We've heard a lot about Magic Leap, this mysterious company that has a mixed reality in the cards but won't show it off to anybody. And we keep hearing rumors that maybe that's because it just disgustingly ugly right now and gigantic, and they're not ready for market either. The HoloLens, I've worn that. I don't know if you've worn that yet, but you wear the HoloLens, and it's kind of this heavy contraption on your head that only has a couple hours of battery life. This iPhone that everybody's carrying around in their pocket with them anyhow, to be able to do these kinds of things there, it's a big deal. And when Apple's ready with their glasses, when they've figured out what the form factor looks like, when they've gotten it to the point where it's, you know, the Apple product that you typically come to know from them, where it's, you say, hey, how didn't anybody imagine the device could look like this, could feel like this, could be this portable before Apple came out with it? That's what we're going to eventually see from Apple, I think. In the meantime, they've got all these developers making the apps on these devices that they already own, that they already know there's going to be a market for those apps.
Yeah, and the lack of a requirement of specialized hardware. I've been really interested in following the project kind of Tango development. Along the way, I've been, when I've actually had my hands on the hardware, aside from this I/O, which was a little different, but in previous iterations, been slightly unimpressed compared to what I expected out of it. This time, a little bit more so. But I find it so striking, so interesting that Google has been developing for a few years now with dedicated hardware. And that's been their approach. Yet Apple comes out of the gate. How are their approaches so different? How is Apple just taking the hardware on the phone and making this happen? And why didn't a company like Google figure that out?
I imagine Google is kicking themselves right now, wondering why they didn't figure it out. But I think for quite a while now, people had thought it's going to be the headset. It's got to be the headset. It's got to be the headset where this happens, because you don't want augmented reality to be a thing you pull out of your pocket on a phone necessarily. You want it to be something that's ambient, that's all around you, that where you walk out of your house in the morning, you see these virtual pathways that don't actually exist in front of you, telling you where to go, telling you, you know, signs around the road. Hey, there's a great restaurant there. I can tell without actually walking into the restaurant, without actually looking at Yelp, because I can see this overlay in front of my vision that's there all the time. And if you have to pull out the phone to do that, you know, there's a bit of friction there, in that you have to decide to do this. The same way I've got a rear view camera in my car. My car, like all cars from 2016 on, so I think it's a requirement as 2018, have a built-in rear view camera, so that when you shift your car into reverse, the camera comes on, you can see what's behind you, you don't crash in anybody, you don't run over any small children and things like that. You can buy an aftermarket one of these devices for a car that's earlier than that, that doesn't have this rear view camera. But I don't think people use those, because it requires, when they get into their car, they have to say, okay, I want to use my rear view camera application. And they put their phone on their dashboard. They have to stick it up there. And they say, okay, now I'm ready to back up. Where they could have just looked over their shoulder and gone on with their business already. So the idea, I think, was that it had to be in the glasses. But all of a sudden, with this more rudimentary vision of augmented reality, they can get started on the applications. The developers can get started knowing that Apple's probably going to give them a more interesting piece of hardware down the road. They can already prototype all of this stuff today. And the competition doesn't really have that. Microsoft just recently announced some mixed reality headsets that are about $300, where they can start to build those applications, knowing that down the road Microsoft will have better HoloLenses, better wireless gear. In the meanwhile, that's still a device, $300, that consumers aren't going to have, that developers have to buy special if they want to build for Microsoft. Whereas in Apple's platform, everybody has these iPhones and iPads already.
So what about...
Yes, continue.
What about VR? What about Apple VR on the Mac? What did you think about those announcements?
So the VR was even a little bit... How do I put this? It feels like Apple is hesitant to jump headfirst into virtual reality. They didn't say the word game once on stage, video game, even though that's what most of the other virtual reality platforms are focusing on. Is we know that video gamers will buy into virtual reality. Let's build amazing things for them, because we know they'll kickstart this market. And Apple didn't say a video game. Everything they did was around content creation. Even this Star Wars demo that we have on screen right now, this Lucasfilm demo that we're seeing on here, is a demonstration of how folks at Lucasfilm can make Star Wars scenes with virtual reality, not how gamers are necessarily going to experience them. And I think that was very intentional. I think Apple is intentionally saying, hey, we know you content creators and you want to work on Macs. You have Macs already. Let's let you do that. But we don't think that this is the immediate future. We don't think that this is what everybody's going to want as an entertainment system right now. And sure enough, on the side of the other VR hardware manufacturers, we have seen sales have been pretty slow. Mm-hmm. We know that there are 5 million or so Gear VR devices out there, probably more now, since there's been a few months since that announcement. We know that there's been, probably a million of Vives here and a chunk of Oculus Rifts there. But VR is still very small, and Apple doesn't need to get into it right away in a big way for consumers. And what's super interesting to me is that's very different from what Google and Facebook with Oculus and these other companies are doing. They're saying, we can do augmented reality already. Mm. We'll do virtual reality later. Every other company, all the forecasts, all the sales forecasts have been, augmented reality is going to be the eventual amazing technology, but you can get into VR right now. And Apple's just flipping that equation on their head.
So I know you talked to Tim Sweeney, the founder of Epic Games. What did he think about Apple and VR?
Tim, too, believes that VR is something that's going to be bigger further down the road. That was something we got into in our interview. But to him, a company, Tim Sweeney with Epic Games, his company builds the Unreal Engine, which is one of the biggest tools game developers use to create their games. So for him, it's a big deal to have this on the content creation side, even if it's not necessarily for consumers yet. But he does say, too, that there will be games for this platform, that there will be Mac VR games for those folks who have these expensive Apple computers to run them on. And it's something where you do have to buy one of the highest-end Macs out there. You've got to get a Mac Pro at like $5,000. You've got to spend $2,500, I believe, maybe a little bit more than that for the highest-end iMac with that graphics card built in. But he says there will be some titles there. He expects that VR will be a thing on Mac for consumers in a way that it just hasn't been an option until now.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Both of you.
Both of you. I have to say, your daughter is the most well-behaved child, most well-behaved seven-month-old I've ever seen. Super patient. Sean is a senior editor at CNET and is Starfire2258 on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you both. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, have a great night. All right, feedback time. Aaron from Atlanta writes in, I am a patent attorney and I listen to TNT every morning as I get ready for work. I find that it keeps me up to date on tech developments and provides me with ideas for applications of my clients' inventions that may not have considered and which we can then incorporate into our patent applications. Look forward to many more years of listening. Kind of a fan of the day / email. But man, that's awesome. I love finding out how the content's being used.
Yeah. Thank you. I felt like, you know, we talk about a lot of the people that, that have complaints about the show. We give their feedback. So thank you, Aaron from Atlanta. Maybe I need a little pick-me-up today.
Well, we got a couple because we also had a baby on a few moments ago. So.
TNT's fan of the day is Dino on Google Plus, who shared this photo of him underwater saying, I always listen to podcasts when I'm working out. That includes when I'm in the pool. That is amazing.
That's awesome.
I posted on his Google Plus to see what headset that was he was listening to.
I know. I'm very curious.
I tried to pinch and zoom and I couldn't see, but that is awesome. Thank you for watching wherever or listening in this case, although it'd be cool if you could watch, but then you might run into the side. Show us how you watch or listen underwater, underground, wherever you are. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
All right. You know that when a company like Google comes along and does the thing that you did, you should be at least a little worried. Recall back on episode 1785, which was earlier this month, Megan, you showed off fidgetspin.xyz for all of your virtualized fidget spinnering needs. Well, now if you want your fix, all you have to do is open up Google search, of course, and type spinner. And there up at the top of the results is your very own completely free digital fidget spinner. You can swipe it if you like, and it'll spin it around. It doesn't count the spins, though, as like the one that you showed off. And that's kind of satisfying. Mm-hmm. Or you can just, if you're lazy, you can hit the spin button. Mm-hmm. If you're boring, you can just hit that, and it'll spin it for you. But none of this matters anyways. Even Google's late to the fad. According to Google Trends, Google web search activity for fidget spinners peaked in early May after a very swift and steady climb that began sometime in March. Now, web search, YouTube search, and news search figures are all on a pretty rapid decline after peaking mid-May, which could mean peak fidget spinner is in the past.
Yeah, we're at peak fidget spinner.
Beyond.
I like the digital fidget spinners a lot better than the physical fidget spinners.
Really?
Well, Germany had to destroy 35 tons of fidget spinners because the parts were falling off and babies were eating them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or they were the size that babies could eat them.
Right.
So last, my kids went to the science museum with my mom, and she always gets them something. And they bought, one of them bought the Newton's Cradle. Do you remember the Newton's Cradle?
No.
That's the little thing with the
balls.
Oh, yes.
Where you go. Oh, this is so cool. Yeah, I remember that.
My mom was over last night, and she was like, you know, that was my day's fidget spinner.
Really?
Well, because, yeah, I mean, she's pointed out that, like, they were the thing that, like, executives had on their desk.
Yep.
They were really expensive and, you know, and things have changed so much. I mean, the reason why fidget spinners, the fad happened so fast is you could get them so fast and then everyone got them. Like, they all were from China and then...
They weren't that expensive.
There was no patent on them. Usually, if something's a fad, it's like, it's hard to get and you wait to get one and, yeah... What did you call them?
I know you're beyond the point of knowing what a Hatchimal is, but Hatchimal. Yes, it's a big egg, and there's a stuffed animal inside, an electronic stuffed animal inside, and the kid gets the egg, and they have to nurture the egg, and basically over time, at some point, the animal decides to crack the egg and come out, and it's like you've got whatever. That's what you're talking about.
You should get them a real chicken inside an egg.
Yeah, I should totally do that. I trust my kids with a real chicken inside of an egg.
I want to restart the Newton's Cradle fad.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
I loved the Newton's Cradle now that I know what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember it. I didn't remember it by name, though. But
yeah.
They
or
were
else
cool.
the little duck that would drink the water. Yeah.
Whoop. Yep, those are cool,
that
too.
That was a great sound effect.
You have no idea, Megan. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Burke's making a case for Burke's Cradle.
But she spelled your name wrong, Burke.
You did. You spelled your own name wrong. Look the other way. Look the other way. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV. There, you've corrected it. I feel good now. Thank you, Burke.
Share your thoughts on the stories we discuss in the TNT subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me all about your Newton's Cradle, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to Kevin for editing and switching the show today. Appreciate it. Thanks to Burke, of course, for spelling his name wrong. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.